Hey, everybody. Guess what? We have Julie today on the podcast, and
Hey.
we're going to be doing a short but sweet little, maybe also a little sassy, because as Julie has said, she likes to get sassy these days. But we're going to do a really short but sweet episode on how to tell if VBAC or HBAC, or really just anything,
Any.
yeah, any information you see online is real or fake. Now, if you're following along on our social media, you likely have seen a lot of our myth and fact posts. Like, I think we share them probably like once a week, honestly, because there really are so many things out there that are myths and things that are facts. But in a whole other side of, like, a whole addition to myth and fact is really like, what should we be believing? What should we be resharing? Right, Julie? Like, I think that this definitely is something that is close to our hearts. At least I'm going to say close to my heart. I think it's close to Julie's heart
Oh, for
because.
sure.
Right? Like this, we want to protect this community and we want this community to find the real information, not the false information. And we know, I mean, you could literally Google
So
almost
much false
anything.
information.
Yeah. Well, you could Google almost anything and find a lot of real and false information. But when it comes to VBAC, like she said, so much false information. So, we're not even going to do a review of the day of the week. We're going to jump right in just a second after our intro.
Hi, my name is Megan. Welcome to the VBAC Link podcast. I am a VBAC after two C-section mama, a wife, doula, and VBAC educator. This podcast was created to hold space for those wanting to know their options for birth after cesarean. It is a space where you will likely find yourself getting better educated, relate to stories like your own, and finding the inspiration to help you have a better birth experience. Although we will be sharing stories related to cesarean and VBAC, this podcast is for anyone and everyone who wants to receive evidence-based information and learn how to avoid unnecessary or undesired cesareans. The purpose of this podcast is to educate and inform. It is not meant to replace advice from any other medical professional. Don't let diaper rash come between you and your baby. Diaper rash can be one of the worst experiences your little one has to go through. Keeping their delicate skin healthy and happy shouldn't require a spatula to apply thick and goopy treatments that can be just as irritating and uncomfortable. When my oldest was little, she would get the worst diaper rash. It left me feeling so desperate to help her while also wanting something gentle on her skin. Dr. Mom Butt Balm is a pediatrician-approved skin protectant free of dyes, preservatives, and zinc oxide. It was developed by a mom who is also a doctor. When she couldn't find any traditional products that worked for her baby's persistent diaper rash, she let nothing get in her way. You can use just a small amount of Dr. Mom Butt Balm to help soothe your baby's skin and feel confident that you are making the right choice. Dr. Mom is committed to providing an ultra-premium formula for moms that won't settle when it comes to their little ones. Soothe and restore with active ingredients being dimethicone and petrolatum. You can find more about Dr. Mom Butt Balm at drmombuttbalm.com or find it on Amazon or walmart.com.
Hello, women of strength. This is Megan. I am so happy you're listening to the podcast. When I was preparing for my vaginal birth after two cesareans, it was hard to find the evidence-based information in one spot, and it could leave me feeling lonely or even confused. This is why Julie and I created the VBAC Link podcast. And did you know we also send out emails with helpful tips and advice on how to achieve your VBAC, all easily digestible in one email form? Just head over to thevbaclink.com. That is thevbaclink.com and sign up to start receiving your VBAC tips and info today. All right, Julie, ready to get spicy?
Yeah, I think that like maybe the biggest reason that we decided to do this episode, at least for me anyways, why I brought it up is because there's so much information out there that looks good, right? It'll be like, oh my gosh, yes, this is amazing. And we're passionate. Like we as in me and Megan, but we as in you too, who's listening, like clearly you're passionate, right? But we really need to be careful what we're sharing, both from like our business accounts and what we're resharing from other people. Because sometimes, like if you share this information and it's incorrect or wrong and it goes viral, which there's a recent post that has, I think that like sparked this thing, and we're not going to call anybody out. But when you share misinformation and it goes big and people start believing this incorrect information, it can really do damage to the efforts that we're trying to make here, which is increasing access to VBAC for everybody, right? So if you have this entire group of people that think that their chances of having a VBAC at a hospital, let's say, are like, I don't know, 30% or something like that, when really like your chances of having a successful VBAC, if you get to try, right? Like get to try using very loosely, are really between 60 to 80% is the numbers, right? But there was a post recently that went viral that said that they're around, I think, 32% in a hospital. And that's just simply not true. But everybody like the post went viral and everybody's like jumping on board, like, look how much better home birth is than hospital birth. But those statistics were really flawed from a fraud study that was super small, that was done in Germany 20 years ago.
Like less than 2,000 people.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, which could give you some pretty conclusive information, like some, but it's not big. It's not a meta-analysis. It's definitely nothing to be definitive. And it's from Germany. And there's a lot of flaws in the study as well. And so, but everyone saw this thing where like, oh, HVAC success is 87% and hospital VBAC success is 32% or whatever the number was. Mm-hmm. And people are like, look how much better it is at home. And spreading the misinformation, which don't get me wrong, having three HVACs myself, I love home birth. I love home birth after cesarean for whoever feels that it's appropriate for them. But I also know that those numbers are just wrong. And if you share that information and these people believe it, they might be choosing HVAC out of fear instead of having the right information and making the right choice for them. Right. Yeah. And so I don't know. That's what we want to do here is we want to help you spot misinformation easier and learn to question the things that you see on the internet. I think, which sounds so silly, right? Like I'm like, hey, like let's challenge everything. But I saw that post and my first thing was like, heck yeah, that's crazy. Like I'm all for home birth. But then I was like, wait a minute, these numbers don't feel right to me.
Yeah.
And so then I dug a little bit deeper into it. Right. And so we just want to equip you with the knowledge so that you're doing your best to get the most accurate information and spot the information that is not necessarily true. And I think we're all guilty of it. So I'm going to just keep talking, Megan.
I was going to say really quick, like, just like what you just said, like, you're like, heck yeah. Like someone who's passionate about birth, or maybe someone who may have trauma. I'm talking about the specific post, but really in any general post, like someone who may have trauma surrounding the opposite of what that post is supporting. It's so easily to just be like, boom, share. You know, just like what you were saying.
Yeah, you'd be like, oh my gosh, yes, I love HVAC. Let's share this. Let's, you know, everyone needs to hear this. This is important information. We get excited, right?
Yeah, but we need to do exactly what Julie said and take a step back. And this goes for anything. It might be sharing the correct age of a child being out of a car seat. I mean, just random. And you're like, yeah, that looks good. Boom, share. Make sure that you are sharing the right stuff. So let's talk about this. Keep going, Julie. I know you were on a tangent going into, let's talk about how to understand if it's real.
Well, first of all, I think before we do that, I want to admit that like we have been guilty of sharing. I don't want to say like misinformation, but I guess it kind of was because a few years ago we misquoted an ACOG bulletin about VBAC. Right.
Yeah.
And it was me. I did it. It was me. I'm the problem. It's me. Taylor Swift fans out there. What had happened was, so ACOG in their bulletin about VBAC after two C-sections They cite two studies, right? One study that they cite, first of all, they say VBAC after two cesareans is a safe and reasonable option for parents to attempt, and it should be patient-based, the decision, right? Anyways, so they cite two studies. One study that they cited about VBAC after two cesarean shows no increase in rupture rates, VBAC after two cesarean compared to after one. And the second study that they cited showed risk of almost double the rupture rate for VBAC after two cesarean compared to one. And so it's really interesting because they cite these two studies that are equally credible that had drastically different results, right? So when I made the post, I paraphrased the bulletin that said something to the effect of VBAC after two cesareans shows no increase of rupture risk. Now, that was only really kind of half true because I saw the study and I was like, oh my gosh, like Megan said, this is exciting. Everyone needs to know this. So I made the post. Then like we got started getting some kickback on it. And so we looked again because I was like, oh, well, I will show you where in the ACOG bulletin it says this. And then I went and I was just like, oh yeah, it doesn't say exactly that. And so I kind of like unknowingly spread this misinformation. So what we did is we updated the post and we posted an additional post that was a correction, because here at the VBAC Link, we want to make sure that we're giving you 100% accurate information all the time. Now, the reality is we're humans. We're going to make mistakes sometimes. But as soon as we realize we make these mistakes, as long as they are actual mistakes and not just people wanting to talk crap, we're going to correct ourselves, right? So that's the biggest thing. And I want to say, like, it's okay to not be perfect at it all the time, but I think it's also important that when you realize you made a mistake, that you correct it in the same space that you made it, right? So anyways, I just wanted to say that.
Just kind of not wanting to shame anyone for being excited and making these posts. Like,
you should be excited. We're excited.
Yeah. Like, you know, we were really excited to even see that post earlier. And then we like just had to take a step back. And it's not to even shame that person. They're probably really excited to share that information. But again, as a poster, so one, take a step back before you share. And two, take a step back before you post. And if you post and there's question, which unfortunately there was a lot of question on this post, change it. Like, it's okay. It's okay. I actually totally misunderstood this.
Yes. Or
I didn't realize that this wasn't as credible as it felt or seemed, right? And so like one of the best ways to find out if the research or the study or what you're looking at is really, really credible is if it's peer reviewed, honestly, right? Like that is
right. And well, I think before you even go into that is like, if you see data or information like this post shared and it doesn't seem quite right, or even if it does seem right and you don't see a source cited, ask for a source. Especially if they're throwing out numbers like home birth has a 87% success rate for VBAC and hospital birth only has a 32%. Everybody wants to get on board with those numbers, but there was no studies posted. There was no anything. And so I actually went on and made a comment and I asked about it, and she posted four different studies. And I was like, three of these studies aren't even relevant at all. And this other one where you're getting the numbers from is incredibly flawed. And so I think that it's really cool to want to get on board with something that shows these big fancy numbers, but it's really important that you see, at least see a source cited. I would say bare minimum, see a source, ask for a source, and then go through and verify the source. So Megan, let's talk about what makes a source credible.
Yeah.
These are just like some things, like not all of these things are going to be true all the time for a credible source, but these are things to look for and why they're important, right? Sorry, go ahead.
So I think one is like looking who wrote, like who even produced it, right? Like who produced this stat or this article or whatever. And a lot of the time, someone who produced the article may not be the person that produces the stat or the evidence, right? So that's something to also keep in mind. Just because, you know, Sally Jane at whatever company shared an article doesn't mean that she's not a credible person.
Right.
But I think sometimes when we're digging deep into what's credible in the source, the real original source, it will take us to the original source, which then we need to look at. So like ACOG, right? Like we pay attention to ACOG, like midwifery groups and things like this. Like we want to look. So who wrote it? I think one of the things is like, what's the full purpose? Because sometimes one of those articles that I was reading actually wasn't in relation to what the post was about.
Exactly.
I don't know if you saw that. But like, three what's of the them. Purpose of this article? And what's the ultimate goal of why they are, one, writing it in general, and what's their ultimate goal of by giving you the information, right?
Right.
Did you see? When I was reading one of them, I was like, wait, what?
And when she shared these four links and I called her out, I said, these three are about this, that, and the other thing. They're not related to these numbers that you're posting. She deleted that, all that other information that she shared, and just kept the one outdated German study up. And it's not like I felt really salty then. I still feel a teeny bit salty now about that. But like, yeah, I feel like asking the author of the poster, and like, I know that at the VBAC, I don't know, when I was there, I tried to make really sure that we did this, but I feel like you still do. But like, whenever we post anything like with stats or numbers or like that, like we try to post a source with it like every time.
Yeah, for sure.
And in our courses and everything like that. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Sorry.
No, it's
so just I think fine. We're going two different directions there. It's fine. Circle back. Go ahead.
No, keep going. Yeah. So I definitely think that you really need to break it down and look, and then really look at the ultimate study. So if it is saying that you have a whatever success chance of having a VBAC in the hospital or having a VBAC in general, and you're looking at the stats, if you're looking at a review that has, you know, 9,000 people, and then there's another one that has 400,000 people involved in that study, to me, automatically, I'm going to be looking at the difference there. Because to me, 9,000, I mean, that is a lot, but like this one was less than 2,000 specifically.
Right.
So when we're looking at big studies, if you have a very small control group, it's just not as credible as some other sources.
Right. What I really love is when I can find a Cochrane review about something. Like Cochrane review, in my opinion, is like the most credible place, because what Cochrane reviews are is their meta-analysis of a bunch of different studies. So what they do is they find a whole bunch of studies or research papers or evidence or just huge giant collections of data. They go through and pick them all apart and find out which ones are credible and which ones are not credible. And then they compile the results in those studies to have a bigger, like I said, meta-analysis, which is meta-analysis is a collection of a whole bunch of credible studies really pulled apart and data presented. And so I love if I can find a solid Cochrane review, because I know that that is just about as credible as you can get. Also realize that most studies have flaws and limitations, right? Like Megan was talking about, who's behind the study, who funded the study, who contributed to the study, what were the study controls, how many variables were there? Because if you have a study with more than one variable, then your numbers are going to be kind of skewed anyways, because these different variables may influence each other. So if you have like, for example, let's talk about the ARRIVE trial, right? Like the ARRIVE trial, we know all the flaws. I'm not going to go over all of them, but they were funded by a doctor at a hospital whose goal was to show that induction provides the same or better outcomes than waiting for spontaneous labor. Like that is the intention of the study. And when you go in trying to prove something, you're already introducing bias into the study. And you could bring protocols or procedures into the study that might not be realistic in the real world that could influence the results of the study, which is one of the things that actually happened in that ARRIVE trial. So it's really hard, because a lot of studies, I feel like, could be picked apart and torn apart, which is why I really love Cochrane reviews and meta-analyses, right? Is because you can compile all of these and get more accurate results and information. But, and it also, here's the thing, like with that study, that one study that she showed that had less than 2,000 people that's 20 years old, and it was based in Germany, that's not going to be relevant in the current day to somebody in the United States.
Well, okay, so that's another thing that I wanted to bring up is how long ago was the study? Because if the study was done in 1990 and we're now in 2024, there is a large chance that things have changed either way, maybe in favor of that or the opposite, right? And so we need to look at also the date. So if you're looking at something, and here at the VBAC Link, we know we have stuff that it was even published in 2020, you know, that there may be a new article out in 2022 or 2023, and we need to stay up to date on these things. So it is so important to also look at that date, because that to me, like something 20 years ago or even 10 years ago, that might actually be the most recent study.
And if that is, then that's all you can use, right?
Right, right. And so there's that. But there may be a newer study. So again, before just clicking share or create or something like that, it kind of just goes back to stepping back, looking at it. And let me tell you, Women of Strength, right now, if you find a study online and you are like, wow, I am really, really curious about this post or about this study or whatever it may be, but you're unsure, email us. info@thevbacklink.com. Email us. We will help you. We will help you make sure to break it down and tell you the efficacy, if I like say, like how efficient and correct it is. Like, what's the right word?
I don't think efficient is the right word.
That's not. I don't know.
Accuracy.
Accuracy.
Oh my gosh. You should listen to us. We know how to speak.
You should. Email us, you guys, because I don't even know how to use my words, but I can tell you how to break down a study. No, but really, accuracy, that's the right word. Thank goodness for Julie.
I mean, like, and I think that maybe a more appropriate thing for her to have said in that post would be like, your chances of having a VBAC are higher at home than in a hospital. That accurate, 100%. Because it's true. Like, out of hospital births, at least around here in Utah, okay, I can't speak to other parts of the country, so maybe I should say that. Around here in Utah, where we are, and I can confidently say probably in a lot of other parts of the country, that when you have a skilled home birth midwife and you are a low risk pregnancy, and VBAC does not make you high risk, PS, that you have a much higher chance. Now, there are no studies done for here in Utah, but we have seen a lot. I mean, there's this Canadian home birth study that was just done that took a look at VBAC as well, that showed similar things. But we know that the American Pregnancy Association says that women who attempt a VBAC have between a 60 to 80% chance of who attempt a VBAC have a 60 to 80% chance of getting a VBAC. Now, around here, we in our birth centers and out of hospital births and home births, we see over 90% of that success rate in all the midwives and stuff like that, that we have seen and talked to that have shared their data with us. So that's some good data.
We're lucky here. I have only seen, out of all the years of 10 years of doing births, I've only seen 2 VBAC transfers. And actually, the one was because she really just wanted an epidural. That's the only reason why she left. Mm-hmm. And then the second one was because we did have quite a stall. And I think it all was a mental thing. I think that she actually needed to be at the hospital. And then they still had VBAC. So that's great, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And I've seen one transfer, but that cord was wrapped around that baby neck 4 times, and they had to cut the cord before they took the baby out by cesarean. Whoa. Because the baby, so the baby was, okay, now nuchal cord, like a cord wrapped around the neck, most of the time is not a need for cesarean. But this mama pushed and pushed and pushed at home for hours. We transferred her, got an epidural. Baby's heart rate started to not do good. They took her back for a C-section. Cords wrapped around the neck 4 times. And they couldn't even pull the baby out because That's the cord was wrapped so tight. So they had to cut the cord in 4 places before they could pull the baby out by C-section.
Wow.
Wild, wow. Right? So wild. And that absolutely necessary cesarean. That baby was not coming out.
Wow.
Absolutely necessary. But, and things like that are going to happen. And it's cases like that where we're so grateful for C-sections, right? Like that. This is one of those things where, like, if it would have been 300 years ago, mom and baby probably would have died because that baby was so wound up in there. This is one of those true cases. Most of the time when people say that, not true. In my opinion, don't cite me.
Hey, well, the true takeaway today from this episode is check your facts.
Yeah.
And if you see something that doesn't feel right, sounded like, one, well, I guess check it again, but don't just share it, and ask for the source if there's not a source, and check if it's peer reviewed, check if it's a Cochrane review, you know, all these things. Again, check the date, check the amount of people that were in it, really do your research. And if you do have a question, please do not hesitate to email us at info@thevbacklink.com. We would be glad to help you decipher if that is a factual or a not so factual article or stat or whatever it may be.
Whatever it may be. Do you know what is funny? Let me throw out another example really fast and then we'll wrap this thing up. Years and years and years ago, 9 years ago. So my first VBAC baby just turned 9. And after he was born, oh my gosh, all the things, I had all the mental health things. And one of my biggest things was that I thought, this is probably going to be a little controversial, sorry to stir the pot. I thought that in order to be a good mom, I had to, and I had a checklist, right? I had to, because I wasn't going to have a NICU baby. I wasn't going to have the same situation. I thought I had to be completely different. I had to breastfeed. I had to go and get him every single time he cried. I had to go like right away, instantly, drop everything. I thought I had to, you know, do all these XYZ things. And one of the things that made me think that, like with my first baby, we did what is that method called? It's such as a W, I think. Anyways, we're like, it's kind of like a modified version of cry it out. Like you let them cry for like a minute and then 2 minutes or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it worked really good. And he's still my best sleeper, to be honest. Anyways, but I thought that, oh my gosh, that was so bad. I can't believe I damaged my child like that. Yada, yada, yada. And there's probably people that are listening right now that'll be like, well, you did damage your child by doing that. But anyways, he's damaged for other reasons, but not that one. And so with my second, I wasn't going to do it. Because there was a study that showed that babies that were left alone to cry it out had the stress part of their brain remained activated for like up to an hour after they stopped crying and like all these things, right? Well, I was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I ever did that. I'm the most horrible mom ever. And clearly I think differently now. But anyways, so like I paid a postpartum doula to come in and help me learn how to gently encourage them to sleep. Well, it turned out my stinking baby would cry in his sleep. He would cry while he was sleeping.
Oh, no.
So I would go in there and I would be like, oh, super mom to the rescue. And I would pick him up while he was crying and wake my baby up, who proceeded to cry for 2 hours because he couldn't go back to sleep because I was waking him up. And anyways, it was this whole thing. I know, stupid, right? So anyways, everybody's different. But my point is this study, which everybody was sharing about the damages of cry it out and how we're damaging our children and they're going to grow up to be people that feel unloved, right? That's what that was the thing. Do you remember that? Do you remember that? It's like 9 years ago or so, maybe even a little more recent than that. But the study had 4 babies in it. Four babies. And these babies were in a hospital environment in like those little plastic bassinets.
What?
So not only was there only 4 babies, but they were monitoring them in an environment that is unfamiliar and not letting their caretaker come in and soothe them at any time during this study.
What?
Yes. Don't let your baby cry until they throw up, for sure. Go and soothe your baby. But four babies in an unfamiliar environment without their caretaker there, any part of it.
Oh, wow. That was enough to say that was...
Yes. And this is where all of these advocates for not letting your baby cry at all got their information from. Isn't that ludicrous? That is insane, right?
That is insane. That just means that we need to take a step back, look at what we're sharing. Don't just share it. Always look at the study. Always.
And look at how much damage that did to my mental health. And not only everybody else's.
Sure, many others.
I know I'm not the only one. You know, I just, so seriously, like, dig in deep and trust your intuition and follow your instincts. Like, you know what's right. Going on the tangent for your baby, but also, like, if you see something that feels a little strange or that's throwing out numbers without information, ask for evidence, ask for proof. Where did you get that information from? Because we have, I will say this and then we'll close it up, I promise. I hate it when people say, like, oh, don't confuse your Google search for my medical degree. Well, that's BS, because you know how many times I've seen doctors Google something while I've been in their office? Yeah, for real. First of all, not saying that a Google search is equivalent to a medical degree at all, because I know that way more goes into that. But we have access to the largest database of information that has ever existed in the entire history of humanity, right? We have access to Google. There's Google, there's Google Scholar, there's everything. And if you know how to distinguish credible versus not credible information, there is so much power in a Google search that you can use to help you in anything you need to know, anything in the entire world, right? Should you have a doctor? Sure, you absolutely should. But also, you know yourself and you have access to all this information, and it's a very powerful tool that we have, and we should be really grateful for it, because we don't have to rely 100% on other people with different knowledge than us anymore. And so don't discount that. Don't discount your ability to find out if something is credible or not, because you have access to that power at your fingertips. It's pretty freaking amazing.
It is. Okay, done. All right, women of strength, we're going to let you go. We said it was going to be a nice and quick one. It really was. And hopefully you got some information and will feel more confident in going out and looking at all the many things that is said about VBAC. And, you know, I honestly think that is another reason why we created our course, Julie, because we were so easily able to find so many things that were false.
Yeah.
Out on the internet. And we wanted to make sure that all the real credible sources were in one place. So find those places, you guys. Check out our blog, check out the podcast. We have lots of links. Check out our course. So many amazing things, so many great stats. And hey, if you find a stat if you find something within our blog and you're like, oh my gosh, I've seen something new, hey, let us know for sure. Like, we want to make sure that the most up-to-date information is out there. So we do not hesitate to take any suggestions. And if you see something, question us for sure. Please, please, please. Because like Julie said earlier, like, sometimes people misunderstand or misword or whatever, and we want to like give them credit, but we really want to make sure that the right information is given to you. So
absolutely.
Without further ado, I'm going to say goodbye and I love you. Bye.
Without further ado, we will say adieu.
We will say adieu. Goodbye.
Bye.
Interested in sharing your VBAC? Head over to thevbaclink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to thevbaclink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC Link.